Hello, welcome to Relevant Tones. I am your host for this episode, Matthew Dosland, and today I am delighted to be joined by composer Sophia Yanni. Sophia, thanks for being here. How are you?
I'm really good. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you, excited to get to talking about you and your music. For those of you that might not know, Sophia is currently the composer in residence for the Dallas Symphony Orchestra for this, the 23-24 season, as well as next season, and also the 2023 Musical Artist in Residence for the Arvo Pärt Center, and a co-founder of Feet Become Ears, which is a very interesting, very cool contemporary music series in Germany. So I'm very excited to have her on to talk and discuss most of those things and probably some other things as well. So Sophia, I think where I'd like to start is just currently what you're working on. I know that you've been in Dallas, you've been in Munich, I believe. You're kind of splitting some time between Germany and the U.S. How's that going? How is that? And how is working with the Dallas Symphony Orchestra?
Yeah, so far I've not been in Dallas yet,
okay.
Unfortunately, because I'm having a baby in December, actually, so I can't fly.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I was supposed to go to Dallas in November, but that didn't work out, so we had to do it remotely, which worked out really, really well. And the first time I'm going over there actually is in April, which I'm really looking forward to. And what we've been working on so far, not yet really together, it was more on my side. I reviewed a piece they are going to play in February in Dallas, which is called Flare, an orchestra piece. And yeah, that's what I've been working on early this fall. And so far, I just managed to send in my parts and my score in time. So step one worked out. Yeah, success. And then, yeah, in February, we will do the rehearsals remotely. And in April, I will go over there for a chamber music concert and some seminars. And then what's really exciting, actually, they are coming to Europe in summer, and they are bringing Flair to Munich, where I'm living. So that's really nice. I'm looking forward to that.
That's really exciting. That's very cool that you've gotten this residency at this orchestra, and then they're coming to Europe. That's a really cool little moment and cool thing for you, especially for them to be in Munich, where you are. That's fantastic. So how did the residency come about? I know that you were studying at Yale, I believe, and then it seems like you finished there, I believe, and then you started at Dallas. What was that transition like?
So I met Angelica Negron through a mutual friend, and she was the composer in residence of Dallas Symphony before me. And I think she programmed one of my chamber music pieces in one of the chamber music concerts she had to curate. And yeah, and then as a consequence, the symphony asked me for some orchestra scores, and I sent them to them. And then I heard nothing from them. And then half a year later, the artistic director, Katie McGinnis, called me, and she proposed that I should write a piece for them. And I was really, really excited. And we had a really, really nice chat. She's really lovely. And a couple of weeks later, she called and asked me if I wanted to be the composer in residence. So yeah, it was really easy going. And yeah, what's really jumping at me, that everybody in this organization is so open and so nice. And like, they really let you in and be part of the organization. It's yeah, it's really sweet.
Yeah, wonderful. It's nice to hear that it was a good process. It was like not super overbearing or anything like that. Very, very nice to hear that you're having a good time with them, and that you feel Like it's a good environment because that's always
Definitely.
something with contemporary music, and especially when we get to larger orchestras, it's always nice to see them embracing contemporary music and
Yeah.
playing a lot of it and programming it, which obviously Dallas does quite a bit of. So
Yeah, it's
it's good.
amazing. Yeah, they're really conscious about contemporary new music, and especially for composers, it sometimes can feel so. I mean, we are not really part of any organization, right? And then you just come into the group and you're always like the person from the outside, and especially with an orchestra where there are so many people and they are working so closely together, like every day, it sometimes can feel a little bit strange or cold. But
Yeah.
with Dallas, I really have the impression that everybody's really aware of the situation and they're really embracing new music and composers, and they have a good understanding of what a composer is and what the position of a composer is. And that's very, very valuable, actually. So far,
Yeah.
the working with them was a joy.
Yeah, with yeah, the orchestra always has their sound and they're all together all the time, and as a composer coming in, it's and you don't always get a ton of chances to write for orchestra either. It's hard to
Yeah,
get
right.
those things performed, and
Yeah.
you have a wonderful piece, Flair, which is a gorgeous orchestral piece. What is when you write for orchestra, is it any different than writing for you for like string quartet or for smaller ensembles? How do you approach it?
That's a good question. I mean, it always comes from the same brain and the same heart, so everything is like always a little bit the same. But yeah, of course there are different challenges, and when writing for orchestra, the thing is that at least I'm aware all the time that I'm writing for a lot of people, and so it's definitely less personal than writing for just a soloist or a small chamber music group, because often you're in close contact and you can like try out some stuff depending on how close you are or well you know each other. But usually people are pretty open to workshop things, which is really, really helpful, actually. And with orchestra, you can't do that. You have to write the music and then you have to hope for the best, and then maybe after the premiere you can change things and adapt. So it's definitely a bit scarier to write for orchestra, I would say. And yeah, at least for me, sometimes because you're writing for this huge crowd of people, you're also writing for a larger hall, usually, because this music is performed in more like public places, more how do you say, more official places. So I have the impression that in general, orchestra music sometimes the when you look at other pieces for inspiration, they sometimes feel more like something more official, more like a public speech, or that like composers have to show their more less personal self, maybe less intimate self. And that's something I've been struggling with, because I usually like my music to be very personal and not that academic in a certain way. And with the orchestra, it's a bit sensitive, but yeah, that's what I've been trying to do with Flair when I was working on Flair, that it comes from a really personal place and not from such an official place, like not like a public speech, but more like a diary entry, so to say, if you want to
Yeah.
compare it to writing. And yeah, so those things are in my mind when I'm writing for orchestra.
With some of your I've seen your music described as a minimalist. I kind of, in some ways, I don't want to like put any, you can tell me if it is or not. I that's beside the point. But some of a lot of the Music is a Mirror, the album that you released recently, is a lot more, I would say, intimate music. And scaling that up into an orchestra, I can see where it's now you're dealing with so many layers, you're dealing with so many different instruments, and it can't be as intimate. And you said you struggled with that. What have you found? I mean, what have you found that you like with orchestral composing versus chamber composing? Like, is it or solo?
Yeah, definitely that you have the possibility to make it so multidimensional. So sometimes, because before I was focusing on concert music, I spent a lot of time with electronic music, and I spent a lot of time in Ableton producing music. And you have no limitations there, right? You can use as many musical layers as you want, and you can make it pretty multidimensional. And if like I really like about orchestra that you can think sort of in a similar way. You have foreground, middle ground, background, and all these layers can happen at the same time, and you can't do that with chamber music. So, or not to that extent. And that's something I find really, really interesting.
feet become ears is a really interesting, very cool festival or series, not festival, series that you started or co-founded with some other musicians. Would you want to talk a little bit about that and what it is, what it aims to do?
Yeah, sure. So Feet Become Ears is a concert series that we launched this year, and we had four different programs that were performed in Munich as well as in Leipzig. So we had altogether eight concerts, but four different programs. And yeah, what we aim to do practically it touches on what I just said about the landscape of new music in Germany. That is sort of from our perspective, it's a little bit restrained. Like the aesthetic spectrum is a little bit restrained, and what we are interested in is to extend it and to make it a little bit more open-minded, that so that more voices can be heard and can find their place in this kind of musical field. So the main focus basically is aesthetics, I would say. We are trying to find composers that are not writing in this avant-garde kind of language, but are more tonal or more, I don't know, it's hard to put labels on music, I feel like, but maybe you can say I'm more in the minimal spectrum, but I'm not sure if that's true for everybody. But yeah, so because I mean, in Germany, it's really like that. If you use key signature, you're out of the window. You can't go practically to university. You can't win any competitions. You can't go to festivals. And we want to make this kind of thing possible. Like we see notated music basically only as an approach, but not as a definition for what aesthetics you use. So yeah, that was our idea and our main focus. And also we wanted to bring this kind of music to a kind of different kind of audience. Yeah, our generation, millennial generation, so younger people, but not only music nerds, but maybe people who don't know that they are interested in that kind of music because they don't really have access to this kind of music, but give them the chance to discover it. So yeah, that's why we also chose the places where we were bringing this music to very carefully to reach this kind of audience.
Thank you.
I wanted to talk a little bit about your time at the Arvo Pärt Center this summer. Just what was it like? I follow you on Instagram, so I was seeing these lovely photos of the forests and these just it's gorgeous. It looks amazing. So I mean, what was it? Was it kind of a you got to go there very busy, I'm assuming, with composing? Were you teaching there? What was going on at the Arvo Pärt Center?
Yeah, so basically they offer composers a place to compose. So
Okay.
it's I just went there with my projects and I had a lot of time on my hands and basically no people disrupting me. So it's basically you get the chance to do really focused work, which
Yeah.
is amazing in the middle of the forest. So the place is it's based on a peninsula. So there's the sea all around it, and you're sitting in the middle of a forest, which is like the place is kind of it's kind of nuts actually, because it's this super nice building, it's very new, and it's all about Arvo Pärt. So they're really proud of him.
As
And
they should be.
as it should be, yeah. And yeah, that was actually this was really distracting to me because I came there and I had all these plans to do a lot of work, and then you go there and then you have the personal library of Arvo Pärt paired there, like there's this library and it's based on his personal books, and it's so interesting because you really can see what is going on in his mind, what interests him, where are these ideas coming from, what are the topics that interest him. And then there's all his music, there are the scores of like every single piece of his. And yeah, I really liked his music. And so the first week I spent practically only studying his music instead of writing my own. So I was procrastinating a lot. But yeah, it was really worthwhile. And yes, I said the place is amazing. They have a really good cafe, by the way, with really good cake.
For anybody who goes, great, great cafe.
No, really.
Awesome. No, that's good to know. You have to know that you can get a good coffee and cake. It's very important.
No, yeah, no,
It
but
is.
just kidding. But it's an extremely inspiring place. It's very
Yeah.
calm there, and they have concerts there multiple times a week because they have a really nice concert hall. The people are super nice and super inspiring. Many of them are working part-time because they're also artists or composers themselves. So it's a really nice crowd. And as I said, there's nature all around. And also Arvo Pärt is living close by. So I ran into him a couple of times when he was on his walk in the morning. And yeah, it was a good experience.
Music is a Mirror, the album that you released in 2022, which we haven't really talked about yet, and I do want to talk about it because it's a very, very good album of music and has str the string quartet on it, which I love. See the Grass is Full of Stars. What was the how did that piece come about? How did it start? But also, it's an interesting structure. It's kind of short movements. It's broken up into a number of movements. What was the reasoning behind that kind of structure to the string quartet? And yeah.
Yeah, so this piece also developed over a longer period of time. I remember I started it when it was still in my undergrad, studying my undergrad. And actually the first string quartet I wrote parts of the piece for was the Sirius quartet, which is based in New York. Coincidentally, my professor was friends with the second violinist, and that's how they came to Munich and we worked together. And yeah, we were supposed at the time to write a 7-minute piece. So 7 minutes from that piece were written before the bio. I revised it a lot, so it's technically only the cell from which it started. And at the time I was I wanted to create this kind of music where you can I wanted to write a large piece. So there is this musical experience where you can just fall into, and it's like a river. You're like in this musical stream, and things happen, and you can look around, and you can just flow with the music. And so it was important for me that the piece was really long enough and versatile in a way, but still coming from the same origin in a way, in a sense. So that was what I was striving for. And yeah, I was working after that first glimpse I wrote during my undergrad. I worked on this piece, I think, on and off for 1.5 years. And I was workshopping it also with a string quartet at some points. And yeah, I think what inspired or w why I wanted to write this large piece or this create this long musical experience was because I was very influenced early on by the late Schubert sonatas. And for example, the last Schubert sonata has this super gorgeous, beautiful first movement that's like, I don't know, 20, 21 minutes. And I remember even as a small kid, I loved that experience that you could just sit in this kind of music and it would never stop, but lead you through or guide you through these different musical ideas and keep on developing and developing and never getting boring. And so yeah, I wanted to have this experience also as a composer.
I'm guessing that you'll be writing a new piece for Dallas at some point. Have you started sketching that? Have you started thinking about it? I mean, it's okay if you haven't, but I'm just curious to see where the process takes you and what you've talked about now. Is that continuing down the line into more orchestral and when you have a large ensemble? And you can do a large time scale. There's a lot available to a composer at that point. So where do you kind of see that going?
Yeah, so I mean, it's a little bit dangerous to talk about your music this early in a process.
Of
So
course, of course.
nothing from what I'm about to say might materialize. It might be changing completely. But yeah, no, I started thinking about it, and I have this really nice chord progression I really like that's going on forever and it's never repeating itself. And so yeah, I'm kind of onto this music as a stream kind of idea, and I would love to think really deeply about the colors and about the idea of foreground, middle ground, background, like what can happen at the same time within this chord progression, and what how can I make this work. Through the colors or through different types of instrumentation within the orchestra. I mean, yeah, has not always the full orchestra. Yeah, so that's what I'm currently researching
Yeah.
in my brain.
Thinking about it, you're considering
Thinking
the
about it.
options,
Yeah.
how it could come about. Yeah, and with that, do you find yourself finding like do you get an idea for something and maybe go like you're working on that project and going, it's not for that project, but that is an idea for something else. Do you What does that process look for you? Do you like store those things away, hold on to them, and then come back to them? What, yeah.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's what I was talking about or touching on earlier when I said you have these different ideas for one instrumentation, and then you have to choose which one is working best. And yeah, I usually make sure I store the other ideas I really like at some point. Like for example, the chord progression actually was for a different kind of piece first, also for a very colorful but smaller instrumentation. And yeah, I always wanted to use it, and maybe now it's the time. So yeah.
Maybe we'll see.
Yeah, maybe we'll see. Ask again in next September. That's when the deadline is.
That's when it'll be done. We don't know anything between now and then.
Yeah.
What else do you have, anything upcoming in the near future we should know about? It sounds like there's the Dallas Symphony. They're bringing Flair to Europe, which is amazing, and some performances with them. And are you curating some concerts for them, or some chamber music, did you say?
Yeah, in April,
Okay,
I'm
wonderful. Is
curating.
that going to be all new music? Is it not from you, but just in general, or?
So we haven't really talked about it yet, but I assume yeah, it will be new music. Like that would be what I
Yeah.
would want to do.
That's why you're there. Wonderful. Do you have any personal upcoming projects that we should know about, or anything we haven't discussed?
Yeah, we talked about the violin solo cycle, so that's I think the main thing that's coming out early next year, that I will be releasing on an album through Squama Records, which is a really nice label you should check out. And
Everybody do it. Everybody look. Okay.
so yeah, and then I will be busy writing that orchestra piece, and I'm hoping to do a second part of the concert series we are planning to
Yeah.
do in early fall. So,
Very
yeah.
cool. Well, thank you so much for talking. Stay healthy. I wish you all the best with your baby, and congratulations again, and all the best in the musical world as well. Thank you so much for taking the time to sit down and chat.
Likewise. Thank you. Thank you for your time. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. You can find Sophia's music at sophiayani.com. There are links to purchase scores, parts, CDs, you can do all of it. You can buy all of the things there.
Thank you.
Relevant Tones is a production of Access Contemporary Music, a nonprofit organization with the mission of bringing musical creativity to life every day. Find out more at acmusic.org. We also have a Patreon that you can contribute to at two different levels, $5 or $10, if you enjoy what you're listening to. Find out more at patreon.com/relevanttones.